Looking for instant answers to your clinical questions? Meet Polaris, an AI-powered search tool designed specifically for dermatology. With content curated by top dermatology experts, Polaris ensures accurate responses at your fingertips. Visit dermsquared.com and experience the efficiency of Polaris today.
You're listening to the Derms and Conditions podcast.
So today I am going to be not only talking to one person, I'm going to be talking to two. So we have a doubleheader today in addition to me, and I'm Jim Del Rosso, dermatologist in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I have two very special guests here on Derms and Conditions podcast. I think this is going to be a great episode. I have Dr. Farah Kamangar, who is department chair of dermatology at the Palo Alto Medical Foundation. And I have Dr. April Armstrong, who's well known to many of you who follow Derm Squared, who is professor and chief of dermatology at UCLA. So go Bruins. Thanks both of you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So what we're going to talk about today, and I think it's apropos that the other day, Merriam-Webster announced that their word for 2023 is authentic. And it was because of, in the face of all the artificial discussion, artificial intelligence, they felt that it was important to highlight the word authentic. So that's going to be one of the challenges today that I'm going to have for both of you, since I'm going to ask you quite a bit about artificial intelligence. And I waited to do this because when artificial intelligence first came out, I thought there's going to be a lot of noise, and there still is, a lot of things coming from different directions. I wanted to see it shake out for a little while before I started discussing it, so that we're not just in the front end of it where we really don't know what we're seeing happening in the world, but primarily in dermatology. So Farah, if you can tell me how you got involved in artificial intelligence and what you're actually doing, because I know you're very active in it and you've talked about it at the California Dermatology Meeting and some other places. So why don't you get me started? Elucidate me.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me, Jim. So my background, of course, I'm a dermatologist, so we can talk about all the dermatology things and practice management and all the regular things that we do. But the main thing, the reason for this talk, I have a background in engineering. And so I've been involved with health tech for a long time, actually, before health tech was actually cool. So for many years, I was involved in different things and I would talk to my colleagues about it and nobody really cared about like technology in healthcare, in medicine. But then the past year, of course, everybody cares now because it's basically exploded. My background, my interest is on language learning models, which is a very specific subset of artificial intelligence. And over time, there's been developments of basically how to do it. But when ChatGPT came out, it basically, that technology made it able to, if it took you like a year to create something, you could now do it in a week. It totally overnight just revolutionized it. So I obviously, dermatologist with language learning model, like we have to create a dermatology language learning model. So that's what I work on. And that's what I'm super excited about.
Well, the first time I heard about artificial intelligence, it was from Gary Goldenberg, who said, Jim, are you familiar with ChatGPT? It's going to change everything. So he sent me, he put in my name and what a paragraph that ChatGPT came up with. And I said, oh, it's about 80% right. It's nice that they gave me a degree from Harvard that I didn't have because I got it online and I didn't have to pay for it. But I felt that the and a lot of things I've seen, accuracy, it becomes an issue. And I know everybody's aware of that, and I'm sure you are. So when you're talking about someone writing a publication or putting something in an email or in a medical record and utilizing artificial intelligence, how is the accuracy being vetted? Or people are lazy, they go to the quick fix, and that's what I'm concerned about. Not the people that are going to do their due diligence, but the people that are trying to save time and they pass on inaccurate information. So I know that's come up and I'm sure you deal with that.
100%. I think you nailed it. I think that's one of the main issues, is like, where are the errors happening? And there's two kind of main errors. One is like the obvious one, just logical errors. Like you say, what's 2 + 2? And it tells you it's like 10. And so that's obvious. Then there's like these underground hallucinations where it kind of sounds like it might be real and you might not catch it if you don't have the knowledge in that field. And that's the scarier one. I think I'd actually be curious to see what April thinks about this, because I think in different levels of education, I think probably like attending a dermatologist will catch things, maybe a resident too, but maybe a medical student doesn't if they're like using AI and they're writing a publication or a draft. So you might catch things that might be a little bit of a hallucination. The way to circumvent that is with AI and large language models, it's kind of like a garbage in, garbage out problem. If you put in data that's just general, so ChatGPT, they basically took a fourth of the internet, threw it in a learning model, and it came out with answers. That was GPT-3. GPT-4, they took more of the internet, threw it in there, got better. GPT-4, GPT-5, that's what they're doing, putting more and more knowledge. But it's going to be kind of random. But if you take a specific knowledge field, like let's say our dermatology base, and put our, like more than 3,000, 4,000 of our articles in there, what you're going to get out is actually pretty accurate. So that's the way to go about it, is not to use these like general, like a GPT, to get to access your data.
We can't assume that just because individuals are writing an article or writing something up the way we did it before we had this, that every one of those people read every reference that they're citing or actually dug through it if they're the third or the fourth or the fifth author. You know, we don't necessarily know the level of due diligence on those references in that situation either. So we depend on people that we know do a lot. I know April's in this situation a lot with all the publications, but I've never gone back to a publication and April hasn't been able to cite the details at about it. And people like that, like people that we know. But how do you do that on the artificial intelligence side? So you have someone put together a publication. Do they get the references that artificial intelligence used as a list that they can go to? Or do they? How do they know what's in those references?
I think a few things here, because there have been instances where AI would create a reference, but that's irrelevant, right, to what you're actually talking about. So they do that, you know, can be quite a bit because they're pulling some similarities, looking at the analyzing degree of similarity to what you're trying to do. And then other times it may even create a reference that it thought it was there, but it's deriving it from the large body of maybe false information that are also out there. So kind of like the garbage in, garbage out model there. And I think, you know, in terms of the publications, our trainees these days, you know, have at their fingertips this, you know, ChatGPT or other AI programs. There are so many actually AI writing programs. And they're not all bad. And in fact, the journals have very specific kind of stance towards that. For example, let's say you are a non-English speaker and you have great ideas and you did the study very rigorously, but writing can be such a large hurdle and can prevent you actually publishing great results in the good journal. So the journals actually do not frown upon in those circumstances using AI to help construct the content that you already have, making sure it's grammatically correct, make sure it flows well. But the key here is that you have to acknowledge AI just as you would acknowledge, let's say, the use of a medical writer in your paper. So this is very important.
So that has to be disclosed. That's
correct.
A segment of this paper or this paper utilized the following artificial intelligence programs or whatever. That has to be stated up front.
That's right. Yes, exactly. And you can state it as, you know, this program was used, you know, for stylistic or grammar checking purposes. If you do not disclose that, that's problematic. Journals do have AI detection programs, actually. So they will know with a certain degree of probability if AI was used, and they may come back to you and ask you to please disclose or check with you regarding that. So that's very important to also know for our audience.
So Farah, you're a big shot over there at Palo Alto Medical Foundation, right? So you you're overseeing a lot of clinicians, maybe residents, students, whatever you have there, or even office staff. How do you know what they're using? In other words, in electronic medical records or in documenting, can they slip into an AI system and utilize that, but you not necessarily know it? Or is that controlled?
It's very controlled here, actually. So we have 16 dermatologists and about, I think, 50 staff otherwise. So lots of people for sure. And of course, kind of HIPAA compliance is our main thing, especially at CETA. There's so many rules and regulation, of course, that we all sort of follow. The main issue, I think, with using AI platforms that haven't been kind of vetted is just if you're getting any HIPAA information in there, basically. So it's sort of just leaving the EMR system and then going to another system. That's the main thing. And then, of course, when it comes back, you want to make sure it's proofread and that there are no errors in it. It hasn't made up any recommendations that are not correct. Kind of similar to like any other recommendation that's made by staff, by a medical assistant or RN, different physicians of different levels of comfort, but they, whether it's AI produced or just produced by the staff, some physicians need to see everything. Others have a little bit more leeway, but I think it's the same rules apply. Just anything that goes out should probably get your eyes on it.
So with AI, I sort of feel like I have on one shoulder the angel saying, oh, this is bad, this is artificial, and the devil saying, go ahead and use it, and trying to figure out in the middle where it fits. But I think about even before AI, and I look at electronic medical records, and a lot of them bring forth information from previous, sometimes just not accurate, and everybody's accepting it, and nobody's vetting it, and it wasn't. So they're passing on recycled incorrect information, yep, or they're not updating the medical list. I saw one recently where the person was on adalimumab, secukinumab, and certolizumab on the same medication list, but nobody deleted what they did before. So it's because people are human and they don't have the time to do all of this. So I think there's two sides to it. And when I think about it, if we can optimally use it and get systems that are really fine-tuned, it's going to be really good. But there's going to be a learning curve. So what are you doing with that in your institution with your residents, April? How are you handling it?
Yes. So in our institution, I worked at USC before and then now at UCLA. I think our residents are also early adopters of AI. I think this generation really is embracing it very much. And I think we currently do not have an integrated AI response system in our EMR. Parts of our UCLA system is piloting those AI responses. So right now, everything, you know, all the messages that go out is human made. But I do think in the future, we are going to have probably suggested AI response, and then you edit it, and then you send it out. I have introduced to them the DERM GPT, which Farah has created because it's a very specific program for dermatologists and very helpful in terms of generating, for example, letters to the payers so that you can input some key information and it can help you navigate that. So I think on the clinical practice level, we are going to see more derm-specific tools that help us.
So I think the danger I'm hearing from both of you, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that, yes, it could be very helpful. It could save people a lot of time. It could find some very valuable information. It may word things more accurately with better grammar and better punctuation. And maybe you read it and say, you know, that I really like the way that sounds. Maybe some people are not great writers, but you need to have some degree of a human element overseeing the final product. Right. And when people aren't doing that, then you really have no control. So where do people start? If someone in their practice, somebody has a practice, they have a couple of people working for them, maybe dermatologists, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, staff, and they're thinking, hey, I'd like to integrate this, but I don't know where to start. I want to have an open mind. Are there certain places or programs they can go to that are recommended, that have been vetted within dermatology? Not asking you to sell a brand, but just to give some ideas of where they can go. Is there a society that can guide them?
So there are there is the AED AI task force that started. I don't know if they have specific guidelines, but I think that's at least a great thing that that exists, that we're starting to form these organizations within physician societies. And one thing I would say, even a step before that, I think to ensure that we have good products that serve us and serve our patients, we need to have doctors involved even at the earlier phase, which is something I always just like to tell our medical students and residents, is that I want them to start getting involved in with tech companies in development of these products. Because we've seen in the history, all the tech that's kind of been handed down to us that hasn't served us very well. Even before AI, it hasn't been created for us. So there's sort of like the tech 1.0 to now where it's tech 5.0 with AI. Healthcare is kind of followed that healthcare 1.0 to healthcare 5.0, but most offices are where like 2.0 or 3.0 is. 1.0 being like paper charts, 2 to 3 being starting to get EMR, starting to get things like telehealth in. And the doctors that have paper charts, they all have iPhones, right? They don't have flip phones. It's not like they're opposed to technology. They're just opposed to bad technology.
Well, they're opposed to the fact that they can't see as many patients. I mean, you said 1.0 paper charts. I'm like, please give me my paper chart.
Right. But I bet you have iPhones and everything. So it's sort of like, if it was good technology that made your practice faster and better, and technology can do that, of course it can do that, everybody would adopt it. So I think one step before than even just us kind of looking at everything that comes out, we have to be in the development of it. And that's one of those things I always try to tell the tech companies I work with. It's kind of hard because we don't speak the same language as them. So sometimes like, they don't even know how to interact with physicians. But I think that's step one, actually, that we're there in the development of these.
On LinkedIn, there were so many people promoting their AI right out of the chute. It's an opportunity for people to make money. And, you know, and that's always, I mean, making money is a good thing. We all like to make money, but it's also dangerous. It brings in people that are not necessarily going to bring you something that's going to work. And you can get sucked into the wrong thing. We did with some EMRs too, right? Like you said, some of the technologies. Mm-hmm. But do you have any suggestions of where colleagues can go, April, to get more information?
Yeah, I think, you know, we talked about, I'm actually both a fan of ChatGPT and also of DermGPT as well, just because I think I use both of them. I do think DermGPT is more specific and more apropos to dermatologists. And I think when we, and also looking at some of the statements put out by the AI committee by the AAD is useful. One thing I just want to say, you can also train your AI to be more like you. So for you know, ChatGPT, if you didn't like the first response they give you, you can say, give me 3 more options and that, or make it more formal, make it less formal. And it actually will give you a few different types of options. So you can basically edit kind of your command to make it more specific to what you want. And you can tell it to say it with a certain voice.
So my AI said back to me, are you sure? Are you sure you want me to be like you? Question me. Question. Have you ever had a situation, either of you, with a colleague or in your case with a resident that's directly under you, April, where you had to confront them because they weren't upfront about using AI in a paper or in a communication?
I have had trainees where I thought the voice was a little different in the paper than what I was used to. And they usually are very forthcoming because we do talk about these things openly. And so I said, oh, that, you know, that's good to know. Or sometimes they can really be stuck at writing a sentence. And I say, you know, maybe see what the AI suggested ways of rephrasing this is. And then try to think of an original way to then adapt from the way that if there's a way that you like. So almost taking the suggestions and make it more human.
So it's sometimes you're like searching for a word because you don't want to be using the same word over and over again. It's like going to a thesaurus, right? And it's like, oh, where the heck did I put my thesaurus? It can almost serve as a way of doing that. So, I mean, there can certainly be some positive aspects of it. What do you predict is going to happen next with AI? Like a year from now, where do you predict we're going to be, Farah? Because you're at the head of the game on this.
I think, yeah, I think AI is definitely here to stay. It's kind of like in the advent of COVID where people were like, is telehealth going to stay? And like, of course, we know now it is. Telehealth is around. And like a term like telehealth in 5 to 10 years will probably be obsolete. It'll just be a version of the health we get. AI is here to stay for sure. People are kind of like, oh, is it going to replace our jobs? It won't. But people who use AI will replace everyone's jobs, you know, so who aren't using AI. So it's there to stay. I think there's definitely lots of rules and regulations that have to kind of be built around it for sure to make sure it's safe. I think this time around, I'm hoping physicians get ahead of it. So it's not like a technology that happens to us, but like with us.
It gets forced
so
on us.
I'm hoping
right.
it can. Yeah. So I'm hoping it'll actually, because if it is with us and it's looking at the metrics we want, it will actually make our lives a lot easier, get medicine to our patients faster, less burnout for us or staff. Has a lot of potential.
So are there AI platforms that patients can go to and they could type in their symptoms and aspects of their history and the AI is trying to give them their diagnosis?
There's actually, there's a couple of like big articles out like in like news articles about patients who found some rare disease that they've seen 10 doctors for. I mean, this is probably like one in a million, but then they used ChatGPT and it figured out what they had. So, I mean, in theory, it's a large database. So it could potentially help with that too. But I think still, at least for dermatologists, because we're so visual, image-based AI, I don't think will ever be as good as us. Language learning models are definitely already smarter than me. Like when I use DermGPT to answer a response, it sounds way better than what I would have written, which would have been like 3 words. And it comes up with this nice paragraph. But visually, I think I can still beat the system, beat the AI system. So
I got an email from April recently complimenting me. It was this unbelievable email complimenting me on this article I wrote. Now I have to worry, did she write it? Or she just said, send Jim a nice note about his article and the ChatGPT came up with it or whatever. But I'll take it in any case. I'll take it.
I think Dr. Armstrong is probably maybe the one person that we know probably could beat the learning language model, the AI language model.
Nobody can wordsmith like April Armstrong, I can tell you, and do it as quickly as she does.
But maybe I'm using AI.
Maybe we knew about it, right? But do you have any, either of you have any final comments on what I need to know moving forward with AI?
My final comment is, you know, if you haven't used it yet, please try it. It will actually surprise you quite a bit. And the key thing is that you can actually train your AI to be more like you, to speak more like your voice over time.
And how about you, Farah?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's here to stay. So we might as well start engaging with AI, getting involved in ways to make it better just to fit what we need and what our patients need.
Okay. I'm going to ask each of you a question. I have to do this because I'm Italian and our sound guy, Lou Pellegrino, who I think the world of is Italian. We always like to know. I'll start with you, Farah. What's your favorite Italian food?
Ooh, I don't know. I love gnocchi. I love a good pappardelle. I don't know. It's a hard one.
It's a tough one, huh?
Can I skip to April 1st? Well, next, and then I'll steal her answer.
Now you'll pass it to April. Yeah, why don't you check your AI and have it tell you what
what's my favorite AI?
What about you, April?
For me, I would have to say it would have to be risotto. I love risotto, you know, typical northern Italian dish. And I just
what do you like in it? Any particular risotto?
I would say like Arborio is good. And I think a Carnaroli varieties are really good.
Oh, that's great. So now we know a little bit more about each of you. Thank you so much for your time. I know it's still early. I'll likely come back to both of you maybe a year from now or at some time in the future. We'll have a lot more meat to sink our teeth into. Or gnocchi or whatever we choose to sink our teeth into. But thanks a lot for your time today. We're in the early stages, but I think people need to be aware of it and just be open to trying it.
Great. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Derms and Conditions. If you have any questions, please email us at podcasts@dermsquared.com.
Looking for instant answers to your clinical questions? Meet Polaris, an AI-powered search tool designed specifically for dermatology. With content curated by top dermatology experts, Polaris ensures accurate responses at your fingertips. Visit dermsquared.com and experience the efficiency of Polaris today.